speaking to us from Amsterdam. He was in Paris on Friday. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Currently is accepting applications for Human Resources Manager. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena. I'm Amy Goodman. Wear a mask. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm David Brower, David R. Brower, and I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States, and that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland, and I wish you had a lot more company.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler enacts an emergency ban on houseless camps along dangerous roads. Frontier Airlines seeks to buy Spirit in a deal valued at $6.6 billion, and hundreds of activists gather in Minneapolis to protest the fatal police shooting of Amir Locke. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 7th, 2022. I'm Althea Billings. The Oregon Health Authority announced Monday that most of Oregon's indoor mask requirements are set to be lifted by March 31st at the latest. State health officials said the mandate will be lifted for indoor public spaces as well as K-12 schools by the end of March, but it will remain in place for healthcare settings. Once the rules are lifted, individual businesses will still have the option to mandate masks for their staff or customers. The same applies for individual school districts. The current mask rules were put into place in August, when the Delta variant led to a major wave of new cases and sent hospitalizations in the state surging to record levels. Cases and hospitalizations gradually declined in the fall, and by late November, Oregon health officials were facing questions about why they had not announced a timeline to lift the mask mandate. Those questions became less relevant a couple weeks later when the Omicron variant arrived and created an unprecedented case surge. The state now appears to be past the peak of the Omicron wave, as daily cases have been steadily declining and hospitalization rates have leveled off. OHA officials say the indoor mask mandate could lift sooner than March 31st if hospitalizations decline at a faster rate than expected. Officials also recommend high-risk individuals continue wearing masks indoors, including people who haven't been vaccinated and those with compromised immune systems. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler has enacted an emergency ban on houseless people camping along dangerous roads in the city. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the story.
Mayor Ted Wheeler banned houseless people from camping near freeways and along high crash corridors. Wheeler issued an emergency order to that effect, effective Friday afternoon. The mayor directed the city's urban camping team to enforce the order. He said this is the first in a series of executive actions aimed at Portland's houselessness crisis. The Portland Bureau of Transportation previously reported 70% of pedestrians killed by cars last year were houseless. Wheeler's office said his proposal was in the works before the report was issued. Wheeler added, however, the report underscores the need to act quickly. Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, who oversees the Transportation Bureau, said she was not consulted on the order. Wheeler's chief of staff said her office was informed on Thursday. The plan sparked immediate outrage. 25 advocacy organizations wrote a joint rebuttal on Friday. Opponents say the action forces vulnerable Portland residents to move without offering them a place to go. Ashton Simpson, executive director of Oregon Walks, said he felt the mayor's order was shaped not by the Transportation Bureau's findings, but by the Portland Business Alliance. The order will impact upon campers on 30 high-crash highways, encompassing about 8% of Portland. There's no right of return for people who are camping in those areas. Even the mayor does not know where the campers will go. Multnomah County can shelter up to 1,500 people, but there are at least 4,000 houseless residents. A federal court ruling prohibits cities from barring camping unless there is available shelter space. Wheeler did not respond to questions Friday about how his executive order meshes with the federal court ruling. The mayor said, quote, "I think there's also been a systemic bias toward the long-term development of affordable housing, and for some time, I've been something of a lone voice saying we need to act with urgency. I feel the tide has turned. I feel the public supports this direction," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
An inspection of the Hawthorne Bridge tomorrow, Tuesday, February 8th, will impact bridge users. As many as 8 lifts of the drawbridge will be required during the inspection, which will last between 9 a.m. and as late as 3:30 p.m. Each lift will last 10 to 15 minutes, nearly twice as long as a typical lift. The lifts will allow a contractor to inspect the span guide wheels that keep the drawbridge in line with the two support towers when it moves up and down. Crews will also inspect the steel cables that pull the drawbridge up and down. The cables are inspected regularly to ensure the 111-year-old bridge remains in good operating condition. The Hawthorne Bridge is the oldest vertical lift bridge in the country still in operation. There will be time between each bridge lift to clear traffic. Bridge users can avoid delays by using an alternative crossing. Advocates for immigrant rights say ICE has a transfer facility in Northwest Washington that they have not made public. Activists are holding vigils to bring light to the situation. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
Protesters are staging weekly vigils around a facility in a Northwest Washington town that they say is a short-term holding facility for immigration law enforcement. The organization Community to Community Development, or C2C, discovered the facility, an unmarked building in Ferndale, through public records and testimony from community members. Liz Darrow with C2C says in January they believe a restaurant worker from Bellingham was taken to the building before being transferred to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. She says time is of the essence when someone is detained.
If we could get some transparency here in Whatcom County and a family could have access to their family member, then we think that we could slow down the number of folks that are deported here because we could get mobilized and that kind of thing.
David Yost, a spokesperson for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, says the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma is the only detention center of its kind in Washington state. The agency says the individual in question, a restaurant worker, was deported in 2019 and then returned to the community. Yost says specific details of the transportation process are not available for safety and privacy reasons, but notes that it's not uncommon during transport to make several stops. C2C has raised concerns that ICE isn't following its 2021 guidance to focus only on people who pose a threat to national security, public safety, and border security. Brenda Bentley coordinates dignity vigils every Monday near the unmarked building in Ferndale. She says removals have instilled fear in the local community.
When you're not able to contact your loved ones, and this can continue all the way through to being in Tacoma, where the loved ones won't know where the person has gone for 3 days, possibly more, it's like that person has been disappeared off the streets.
Bentley says the road to detention and deportation starts in facilities like the one they suspect in Ferndale. She says the dignity vigils take place on a highway with high visibility.
Community members, once they found out about this ICE location, were really committed to coming every week and putting a spotlight on this site because it shouldn't be allowed to be hidden in our community like this. The public has the right to know what's going on.
Riley Sweeney, a spokesperson for the city of Ferndale, says the city is aware of the Border Patrol facility located within the city limits. But since it's a federal facility, they are not involved with or responsible for the operations at that location. I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
Hundreds of demonstrators took to the streets in Minneapolis over the weekend after a black man was shot and killed by police carrying out a no-knock warrant. 22-year-old Amir Locke was fatally shot by a SWAT team officer with the Minneapolis Police Department as they carried out a warrant at 6:48 a.m. on Wednesday. Police body camera footage of the incident was then released on Thursday. The 54-second clip is graphic, and police have blurred the faces of the officers involved. The recording begins with officers announcing their presence as they enter the door, not beforehand, contrary to what the police news release on the incident claimed. Seconds after entering the apartment, officers see a figure on the couch covered in a blanket that starts to rise. As the figure rises, it becomes apparent that they are holding a gun. Three shots were fired in the footage, and Locke appears to fall to the ground. Locke was transported to Hennepin County Medical Center, where he died. The gun was recovered from the scene. The entire incident unfolded in less than 10 seconds. Locke's family has hired civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump, who said in a statement that Locke had no past criminal history and legally possessed a firearm at the time of his death. Crump added, quote, "Like the case of Breonna Taylor, the tragic killing of Amir Locke shows a pattern of no-knock warrants having deadly consequences for black Americans. This is yet another example of why we need to put an end to these kinds of search warrants so that one day black Americans will be able to sleep safely in their beds at night." The weekend's demonstrations were organized by several police accountability groups, including Communities United Against Police Brutality and the Racial Justice Network. Some gathered outside a home believed to be that of interim Minneapolis Police Chief Amelia Huffman. The protesters chanted the names of Amir Locke, as well as Breonna Taylor, a black woman who was killed by Kentucky police during a no-knock warrant in 2020. They also called for Huffman's resignation. The officer who shot Locke was identified on Thursday as Mark Hanneman, who joined the department in 2015. Hanneman is currently on paid administrative leave. Locke's family said he had just filed paperwork to start a music business and had already designed a logo. Next week, he had planned to move to Dallas, Texas, where he would be closer to his mother and hoped to build a career as a hip-hop artist, following in the musical footsteps of his father. Former Vice President Mike Pence pushes back on Trump election misinformation. The RNC declares the January 6 insurrection legitimate political discourse, and the governor of South Dakota signs a bill banning transgender girls from school sports. With more on those stories, we go to Jonah Chester with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I had no right to overturn the election. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone.
Former Vice President Mike Pence on Friday rejected a claim by former President Donald Trump that Pence could have overturned the results of the November 2020 election. At a Federalist Society conference, Pence commended the work of the Capitol Police during the January 6th insurrection.
January 6th was a dark day in the history of the United States Capitol. Lives were lost, and many were injured.
That came just as the Republican National Committee officially declared the attack as, quote, legitimate political discourse, unquote. The RNC also voted to censure Representatives Liz Cheney of Wyoming and Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, two Republicans on the House panel investigating the attack. The U.S. added nearly 500,000 jobs in January, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. President Joe Biden hailed the job growth and pointed out it's recently been bigger than initially thought.
We learned that job growth in November and December over last year was revised up by more than 700,000 jobs.
South Dakota has become the latest state to adopt a measure banning transgender girls from school sports. Governor Kristi Noem signed the bill into law on Thursday. Supporters of the move argue it will ensure fair competition in school sports. But Catherine Oakley with the Human Rights Campaign says the law further ostracizes trans students.
They're normal kids who are going through all of the things that normal kids go through. And on top of that, they have a legislature that continues to attack them year after year after year.
The 2022 Winter Olympics officially kicked off in Beijing Friday with a few notable absences. The BBC reports 10 countries led by the U.S. have diplomatic boycotts over China's human rights abuses. China stands accused of forcing Uyghur Muslims into forced labor camps in the Xinjiang region. In December, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki announced the U.S. wouldn't be sending diplomats to the Games, although American athletes are still competing.
U.S. diplomatic or official representation would treat these games as business as usual in the face of the PRC's egregious human rights abuses and atrocities in Xinjiang, and we simply can't do that.
The mayor of Ottawa has declared a state of emergency. A 10-day protest by truckers against COVID restrictions has closed access to much of the downtown in Canada's capital. A top Biden aide is warning a Russian invasion of Ukraine could come any day. In a round of talk show interviews Sunday, the White House National Security Advisor warned an invasion would bring a terrible human toll. The U.S. has been shifting troops across Eastern Europe and has placed 8,500 troops on heightened alert. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Mike Moen contributed reporting. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. Reporter Nina Sparling takes a look at the immense power prosecutors hold in the criminal justice system. Then at 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And at 7, it's Let's Talk About Race. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 38 degrees. Tomorrow will again be partly cloudy with a high of 52. Today in history, in 1964, the Beatles arrive in New York City for their very first visit to the U.S. The band was greeted by 3,000 screaming fans who caused a near riot when they stepped off their plane. The quote of the day is from English musician, songwriter, and peace activist John Lennon, who said, quote, "There are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we are afraid, we pull back from life. When we are in love, we are open to all that life has to offer with passion, excitement, and acceptance." Frontier Airlines is offering to buy Spirit Airlines in a $2.9 billion cash and stock deal that would create the nation's fifth largest air carrier. The deal is valued at $6.6 billion when accounting for the assumption of debt and other liabilities. The companies said Monday that the transaction will lead to more low-cost fares for travelers to destinations in the U.S., Latin America, and the Caribbean. However, the carriers may be in for a close look from anti-monopoly regulators. The two airlines reported fourth quarter financial results on Monday, with both losing money in the final 3 months of 2021. Like 2020, both companies lost money for the year and are in a weakened position for 2022. Existing Frontier shareholders will own approximately 51.5%, while existing Spirit stockholders will own 48.5% of the combined airline. The deal still needs approval from Spirit shareholders. The transaction is expected to close in the second half of the year. The combined company is expected to have annual revenues of approximately $5.3 billion based on last year's results. Its board will include 7 members named by Frontier and 5 members named by Spirit. Frontier Chair William Frank will serve as chairman of the combined company. The name of the combined company we'll use has yet to be determined. Oregon's short legislative session will focus on various Native American priorities, a teacher who mocked Native Americans in a California classroom is fired, and the Bureau of Indian Education will distribute more than 1 million masks to funded schools. With all those stories and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A youth and family center in Oregon is keeping an eye on Native American priorities in the state legislature. The short session kicked off last week as Governor Kate Brown delivered her last State of the State address. Eric Tigetoff has more.
Brown gave her final address as Oregon governor virtually this year. She outlined a host of priorities, including a $400 million proposal to address affordable housing. The focus on housing and homelessness aligns with the center's goals. William Miller is head of the NEA Action Fund.
Continued investments in communities that are most impacted is really the most important thing. With COVID and all the issues we've experienced with that, our communities are continuing to struggle. And our youth are struggling, right, in terms of our education and being out of the classroom for so long because of COVID.
In education, the NEA Action Fund is supporting money to provide professional learning opportunities to educators on ethnic studies standards and funding for the Department of Early Learning and Care. In her speech, Brown proposed a $100 million investment in child care. Brown also touted her work advocating for tribal nations in Oregon. Miller says the Legislative Commission on Indian Services has good relationships with tribal partners.
I know Governor Brown has worked to do that as well, and so I think it'll also be really important for whoever the next governor becomes to continue that same relationship building and fostering that relationship with our tribal partners.
Brown says addressing racial disparities in housing and the workforce will be key for her remaining time in office. The NEA Action Fund is supporting a measure from the governor that would expand access to culturally relevant preschool. The organization also hopes lawmakers approve a bill to declare racism a public health crisis, which would create two mobile health units. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A Native artist has been charged with a crime involving a minor in Pawnee, Oklahoma. Indians.com reports Walter Echohawk Jr., known as Bunky, an internationally known visual artist, is facing one felony of lewd acts with a child under 16. He was arrested, booked, and made an initial court appearance in January. Public knowledge of his case started being widely circulated across social media over the weekend after his mugshot was posted in an Oklahoma publication featuring mugshots and criminal stories. A hearing involving the matter is set for March 15th. His artwork and murals are well known and featured across Indian country. A high school teacher in Riverside, California, who was videotaped wearing a fake headdress and mocking Native Americans, has been fired. A cell phone video went viral in October showing the math teacher dancing, chanting, and wearing a headdress while teaching a class at John W. North High School. The Press Enterprise reports the Riverside School Board voted last week 4-1 for her dismissal. Members of the Native community, tribal organizations, and a Native American state lawmaker immediately called on the school district to take action. Assemblymember James Ramos met with the Riverside Unified School District in November and says the district is working on curriculum and policy for Native American education and is moving to create a local task force with tribes. The school district will reportedly soon announce its diversity plans. The Bureau of Indian Education is distributing more than 1 million masks to schools. The BIE announced Friday 600,000 surgical masks will go to K-12 students at all its 183 BIE-funded schools. 600,000 N95 masks will go to staff and adult students, including at Haskell Indian Nations University in Kansas and the Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute in New Mexico. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Tybee Island is seeing more flooding as sea levels rise. Researchers from the University of Georgia are collecting feedback from residents about potential solutions. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more in the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. On Tybee Island, off the coast of Georgia, climate change is hard to ignore. Rapidly rising seas and more extreme storms cause repeated flooding in streets, yards, and homes.
Many of the residents have lived there for a long time, and so they're saying they haven't seen anything like what's happened over the last few years.
Jill Gamble is with the University of Georgia Marine Extension and Georgia Sea Grant. She's part of a team working to identify ways to protect Tybee Island from flooding and erosion.
One of the most vulnerable areas for the island has been the marsh side, which is mostly private property.
So she says it's important to develop solutions that homeowners can support and include residents in the planning process. the team created a website where people can document local flooding. And it's been running public meetings and surveys to gather residents' input about a range of solutions, from creating green spaces designed to absorb excess water to offering property buybacks.
In doing planning, local knowledge and local experiences are so critical, especially if we're trying to create a sustainable, resilient future for a community. They need to be part of the conversation and part of the solutions that we're developing.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
The new America Competes Act, just passed by the U.S. House, aims to boost American manufacturing. It also contains provisions to phase out drift gill nets, a type of fishing gear that targets swordfish but also kills off huge numbers of unintended bycatch. Suzanne Potter has more.
Marine conservation groups are celebrating after the U.S. House passed the America Competes Act on Friday. The bill primarily boosts semiconductor production in the U.S., but a lesser-known provision would phase out an older type of fishing gear called drift gill nets in federal waters, something environmental groups have sought for decades. Ben Entignap is a senior scientist at the nonprofit Oceana. He says the mile-long, nearly invisible gill nets are incredibly dangerous for marine life.
They're set at night in the epicenter of ocean wildlife, the coast of Southern California, to catch swordfish, but they also catch whales, dolphins, sea turtles, sharks, and many, many other animals.
The state of California already is phasing out its state drift gillnet permit program, which offers fishing crews cash to turn in their nets and permits and helps them buy a new, safer type of gear called deep set buoy gear. All but four fishing boat captains in Southern California have begun the transition, and those four will have to follow if the bill becomes law. Opponents of the bill, referring primarily to its provisions on manufacturing, say it is not tough enough on China. Entignap notes that it also would ban the sale of shark fins in the United States.
And we've already prohibited shark fins in California and Oregon and Washington, and this kind of takes that same approach that's already been passed by a number of states and makes it national.
A version of the Competes Act already has passed the U.S. Senate. Now the two have to be reconciled and passed again in both chambers before the final version can go to President Joe Biden's desk. This is Suzanne Potter reporting.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 7th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Jonah Chester, Antonio Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, Eric Tegedoff, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy, covering politics and current events while taking listener calls. At 9, it's Alternative Radio, featuring lectures and interviews with progressive thinkers. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, we'll hear Times Like Now with Trevor Collins. Then at 11:30, it's Art Focus. Host Joseph Gallivan interviews Mariana Ramirez and Edmund Holmes about the Black Lives Matter Artist Grant exhibition, which is on now through April 30th at PSU. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
You're listening to Making Contact.
I'm Salima Hamarani, and on today's Making Contact.
The problem is that prosecutors sometimes want to play judge, jury, and executioner. But if prosecutors of all people don't play by the rules, then how can they expect everyone else in society to play by the rules?
We bring you a piece from our friends at the podcast 70 Million. What happens when prosecutors break the rules during high-stakes trials? Defendants can end up in jail, sometimes for long periods of time, and sometimes for crimes they never committed.
What we see in this system is that prosecutors have such an enormous amount of power. You know, the way that they wield that power often impacts Black people, brown people, immigrants, low-income communities, very often of color.
Today's episode looks at how we can hold prosecutors accountable. Here's 70 Million and their reporter, Nina Sparling.
Lammy and Clinton Turner live on the third floor of a low-rise, red brick apartment building in Kew Gardens Hills, Queens. Lammy opens the door and their dog starts barking. I walk into a small apartment filled with decades worth of memorabilia.
Would you like something to drink?
No, I'm okay.
You sure?
Yeah. Lammy is wrapping up her workday as an accountant and had just been helping her husband get dressed. Clinton had three strokes last year, so Lammy takes care of Clinton as well as working.
And he's just getting up like a little while ago.
Okay. He lost some control over muscle function and needs help walking. He also can't swallow correctly.
I don't know how I did. It's kind of difficult to get across because I can't.
To express himself because of his strokes.
They're both in their 60s and live a quiet life now with routines dictated by Clinton's care. But I'm here to talk to them about something that happened a long time ago when life wasn't so quiet.
It was just crazy. It was a crazy